about 20% of our brain is dedicated to processing the experience. The third fact is that these experiences clearly are a perception of a spaceless, timeless, energetic pattern of existence that the physicists tell us make up all of what we call is real. So a little boy said it best. He says to me, "It was real, Dr. Morse. It was realer than real." and then the fourth thing is, you know, if you're going to say these are hallucinations, well, of course, hallucinations are the perception of something that isn't real. But the theoretical physicists, again, tell us that there are at least two other realities that we can't sense, of course, you know, with our human sensing equipment, but that they've documented exist in the physics laboratory. So it's not hard to connect the dots between, let's see, when we die, a large portion of our brain allows us to connect to a timeless, spaceless reality that theoretical physicists tell us is real. Well, you know, that's why at the start of the show I said the scientific evidence, not a belief system, indicates that these experiences are real. And then the most exciting thing is what you just indicated is, well, if that's so, how does this area of the brain operate? How does it operate when the rest of the brain is not functioning? It must have a source of energy from somewhere.
It's like it's wireless.
Well, you know, so then I think that, you know, a more spiritual person than me would speculate that the source of that energy would be, you know, a god or, you know, patterns of energy throughout the universe. You know, that we're connecting with that spiritual light. And this isn't just some sort of reflex spasm of the optic nerve. And when a child describes that light, they go, "There was a lot of good things in that light." you know, so there's, you know, this is a light that's filled with love. And, you know, there's so much to learn about these experiences, whether we worry about life after death. And that's, to me, that's a beautiful concept that when we die, we're going to be bathed in energetic patterns of love. And, well, you know, I mean, and that's a scientific fact in the year 2004. You know?
Does anybody ever say anything about hell or evil in these circumstances?
Well, people who believe in hell are people who believe in evil or have lived evil lives.
Well, what about a child?
No, they sometimes say the experience is scary because there's that time of darkness. When they're losing all of their input, you know, from their ordinary senses, so that can be scary for them, etc. But typically, then some sort of comfort object or person comes to them and accompanies them through the experience. And I don't hear these kinds of descriptions of a hell. But remember, I told you there's tremendous cultural overlay as we struggle to interpret the experience. In light of something, you know, that we have no understanding of. I mean, we've lost our spiritual bearings. We have no context to put this in for most people. So, sure, you know, people in the Bible Belt are fundamentalist Christians or, you know, people who have strong belief systems which involve hell or evil then frequently see that kind of thing when they die. And New Age spiritualists see, you know, beautiful lights. And like I was telling you, in Africa, they see a big giant gourd that has a light at the top of it, and they're climbing out of that gourd into a lighted existence. And everyone sees it a little bit differently, but I think it's fair to say that we die the life we live. So I'm not sure that I want to believe in hell, because maybe that'll be incorporated into my hellish near-death
experience. We die the life we live. Now that would be fascinating. Now let
well, it's true. We die the life we live. We got to be very careful about the kinds of things we think and believe in, because they clearly are reflected back to us during the experience. Hey, you know, there's one. I got to tell you this. This is because we were talking before about the scientific evidence of are these experiences real. But there's one piece of evidence that is so overwhelming to me, and that's this. A guy named Chris Carr down in the University of Arizona, he's a cultural anthropologist, and he studied these experiences to try to understand what are the common elements of these experiences around different cultures and then also throughout time. You know, he studied the Tibetan Book of the Dead and all this kind of thing. And he reached a fascinating conclusion, which is that we die conscious and aware, which, you know, we know is scientifically true, and then that we learn something when we die, that the dying experience is actually a learning experience. Well, that goes back to your question earlier. Well, where do we get the energy? You know, where does the energy source come, and why are we devoting precious dying brain cells to learning something in the last few minutes of life, and yet the evidence is clear. We learn something that a dying brain takes time out from attempting to save itself to process something that we learn. Well, why would nature have such a thing? I mean, maybe it's because that information that we learn at the end of life is so vital if life continues.
Take us for a moment, if you can, Doctor. Take us beyond the light, and instead of a near-death experience, give me a death experience, and just tell me what will happen. Are you saying that our different belief systems will create even a different death scenario for us?
Ooh, boy, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true at all. Your question is speculative. You know, nobody has died and come back to life. So, I mean, that's clear. You can't, you know, we're talking about patients who have what you would call clinical death, meaning they don't have any vital signs, but
yes,
we
but
can
not actual
them with,
death. They're yeah. dead, yeah. Right.
So they're, you know, so it's the last few seconds of life, I think, indicate that it is a beautiful spiritual experience, that is something that fills us with love, that clearly what awaits us all when we die is something that loves us, and it's a feeling that is not often appreciated or experienced in this life. Many children, one child, I said, what's the bottom line? What happened in your experience? And her eyes darted in her head, and they grew wide, and she had all these faces, and this peaceful, blissful look came on her face, and she just said, I can't tell you. I can't describe it.